This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, shape can tell us a lot of things. The form of a bird's beak can tell you if it eats hard nuts or digs into trees for insects, if it lives in the woods or out near the ocean. My next guest says that shape is revealing not just in biological systems, but in cultural objects as well. This week he published a paper in PLOS One that used this shape information to look at the evolution of violins. Dan Chitwood is the author of that paper. He's a plant biologist, assistant member at the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center in St. Louis. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So tell us, you have taken what biologists do with plants and watched evolution, and you've applied it to studying the evolution of violins.
Yes.
Tell us how you did that, why you did that, and what you learned.
Well, I am a plant biologist by day. And I spend a lot of time thinking about how genes come together to make all the different shapes of leaves that we see and the different functions of these leaves and how they allow plants to thrive in different environments. And there's so much information that is just in the shape of an object. It really tells stories. And leaves, for example, as a leaf expands, it's constantly changing its shape. It can tell you something of the age of the leaf. It can tell you something about where it was in the plant, because plants produce different types of leaves over their lifetime. And on a grander scale, it tells you something about evolution, about how these shapes change over millions of years. And for me, violins are also really complex objects, except they're a lot simpler than biology. We're only dealing with 400 years of history here, only a few hundred violin makers rather than millions of species. And so with only 10,000 violins, you can really get a preview of how evolutionary forces modulate very complex forms like a violin.
So you mean there's evolution happening in a violin like it would happen in a living thing?
Not exactly, but I think it's very appropriate to be thinking about it in that way. Humans are organisms too. And our culture and the products that we make are our traits and phenotypes, just like any other biological organism.
And how do you see it? How do you see evolution? What's happening? You studied the tracing the origins of violins, and you narrowed it down to just a few people, and the evolution that was going on within that group.
Yes. So in a way, violin shape is acting a lot like a viral meme. Shape is changing with time. And as a biologist, I really wanted to know mechanistically why is this shape changing with time. And so you can see when the first violins came on the stage around the 1550s, they were really strange. And there's been very few instruments that have looked like them since. Mm-hmm. And these people had no precedent for making a violin. And then very quickly, you see that Antonio Stradivari innovated a really unique shape that had never been seen before. And when you look at all the shapes of all the violins over history, you can see very clearly that slowly with time, the modern violins started to converge upon the shape of Stradivari. And you might think, well, this must be because his shape confers some sort of desirable attribute to the violin, or it's better in some way. But actually, very recent work in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences has shown that in blind playing tests, people necessarily can't distinguish a Stradivari from other great Italian masters or even well-made modern instruments. And so what was happening, it was people just perceived that Stradivaris were the best. And the great thing about violins is there's so much historical documentation that people were really purposely trying to copy Stradivari. And this shape was so successful because it sold, and people knew that. And very quickly, it disseminated, and it really modulated and evolved the violin form.
Yeah, your data showed that there were four major families that influenced the shape.
Yeah, so one consequence of copying is that if that were true, maybe it's perhaps not the case that there's a continuous spectrum of different violin shapes. Maybe there's only a few types that have been copied. And so when you look at all these violins, there's really four major groups. And when I was so excited when I finally clustered these instruments, because another thing that came out of this was you could see that families, genetically related individuals, were clustering together. And so really human genetic relatedness ended up also influencing the shape of these violins. So in a way, evolution is very appropriate here because genetic lineages even are influencing the shape of violins.
Mm-hmm. How did the change in what type of music was popular influence the shape of the violin? I'm sure it must have. in some way.
So shape is only just one aspect of the violin. And the morphology, the overall geometry and architecture of violins has changed dramatically to accommodate different music styles. Especially as we proceeded from the Baroque to the Classical to the Romantic era, people needed instruments that projected, that had increased volume, different types of timbres, and they would lengthen the fingerboard or angle it differently to accommodate really high tensions under strings. This is really interesting because shape is, it really doesn't modulate the quality of the instrument that much. And this is important because if there were a shape that were better or more ideal, people would have converged very quickly on that specific shape. But because it doesn't really affect the functionality that much, there's this wiggle room. And so what happens is that shape is really influenced by all these historical, cultural, and evolutionary forces.
Huh. And is it still evolving, the violin, or is it basically settled down?
Oh, certainly. Still violin forms, there's all sorts of innovations. I'm a violist, and one of my favorite instruments is the Pellegrina viola. If you look this up, and it's in the first figure of the paper, it's a really strange-looking instrument. It's highly asymmetric with bulges, and it's designed that way to alleviate the back trouble that violas cause. And this is something in the first part of the study that by their shape, violas are more or less indistinguishable from violins. And this creates a lot of problems because violas should be much larger to accommodate their tone and played between the knees.
Like
but
a
we
cello.
Put them under our yes, exactly like a cello.
Like, yeah, so you put it but under your chin and you get all this back trouble.
Yeah, because they should be bigger, so you compromise the tone because it's not big enough, and you make them too big for the players, and they get back trouble. And this is like a developmental constraint. Sometimes organisms get stuck in a particular way of being with the genes or particular developmental systems that they have, and they really can't get out. And so evolution doesn't create the best. It just gives you the best compromise often.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you very much, Dan, for taking time to be with us today. Good luck with your work on your viola. We'll watch for you in Carnegie Hall here in town.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Practice. Dan Chitwood is a biologist and assistant professor at the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center in St. Louis.